Hello and welcome to the Backtracker History Show podcast with me, Alice. Join me as we go on a gentle stroll through the archives to discover intriguing tales about people and events that happened in the past. Each episode is a podcast-friendly version of a show that's been aired on Bradleystoke Radio in Bristol, England, all of which will be brought to life by an array of amazing voice talent from across the world. We have stories about a huge variety of subjects, from activists to war heroes. We've got it all. So get ready for the latest installment of the Backtracker History Show, bringing the past back to life. Today's show is dedicated to just a few of those who made the ultimate sacrifice for our futures. If I had my way, I'd try to recognise every single one of those that fell in battle, but that would take me years to do, so all I can do is mention just a few at a time. And in this show, I'll be talking about a few local men that fell in the Great War. The Great War, or World War I, started on July the 28th, 1914, and spanned 4 years, with intense conflict. It comprised of the Allies, the British Empire, France, Belgium, and Russia, and then the USA, who stood against the Central Powers of Germany, Austria-Hungary, Bulgaria, and Turkey. On August the 4th, 1914, Germany's invasion of Belgium prompted Britain to honour its commitment to defend Belgium, leading to its declaration of war against Germany. This war ushered in a new era of warfare, marked by the use of advanced weaponry and machinery across land, sea, and air, resulting in unprecedented casualties and injuries. The thunderous roar of artillery fire from the Western Front could occasionally be heard across the English Channel in Britain, symbolising the devastating impact of modern warfare. Remarkably, 75% of all male casualties in World War I were attributed to artillery fire. The Battle of the Somme stands as a harrowing testament to the brutality of the conflict, fought by French and British forces against the Germans along the River Somme in France. This protracted battle lasted for over 5 months, claiming the lives of over a million men, leaving countless others wounded. Notably, the Battle of the Somme marked the debut of tanks in combat, further revolutionising the tactics and strategies employed in modern warfare.
In no man's land, one early morn at 60 in the shade, from out the British lines there came the famous Tank Brigade. The Huns began to strap 'em, couldn't make it out at all. Especially when the tanks began the caterpillar crawl, and the tanks went on and they strolled along with an independent air, and their guns began to blare, and the Huns began to swear. But they pulled the trees up by the roots and made the Huns look like galoots. It's the tanks that broke the ranks out in Picardy. The Huns beat through their trenches, for they couldn't understand. They cried, here comes the British Navy sailing on the land. The Kaiser saw them also, and as through the trench he ran, he shouted out to Tirpitz, hush, here comes the bogeyman.
And the tanks went on and they strolled along with an independent air. Said the Huns, it isn't fair, you're not fighting on the square. At the fortress then they made a call and started walking through the wall of the tanks that broke the ranks out into Cardiff. When Hindenburg first saw a tank, he strapped and made a fuss. He said to Little Willie, it's the motor omnibus. Then Little Willie saw it and he made a rude remark. Said he is not a bus at all, it's nowhere inside his ark. And the tank went on and they strolled along with an independent air. And a German colonel there nearly lost his ginger hair. From inside the tank out came a claw and pulled him through the early door. And they took him for a joyride round Picardy. Then it strolled along to the boys along with an independent air. Up and down each thoroughfare, and it didn't seem to care. Then the little bantam drivers cried to all the Tommies, jump inside and it's happened all the way from here to Berlin.
That was The Tanks That Broke the Ranks, which is a 1916 song written jointly by Harry Castling and Harry Carton, celebrating the introduction of the tank, which was first used by the British in 1916 as part of the Battle of the Somme. The song tells the story of a brigade of tanks on the Western Front passing obstacles with ease, and talks about many prominent German military leaders of the day, including Kaiser Wilhelm. This song became popular during the Christmas pantomime performances at the end of 1916. The first soldier I'd like to talk about is Private Frederick Rogers, the son of William and Fanny of 67 Sandholm Road in Brislington. Was an 18-year-old labourer at Terrell's Rope Works when he signed on for short service in the Somerset Light Infantry. In 1910, his adventure done, he came back to work at Terrell's and married Alice Maud Wagland. The happy couple settled at 6 Harrow Road with their two daughters, Lillian and Hilda. And at the outbreak of war, Fred was recalled to the 1st Battalion of the South Wales Borderers and was sent to France as part of the British Expeditionary Force. The action at the Battle of the Marne on the day of his death is described in the regimental diary.
Friday, 18th September. At dawn, the firing starts again, and this time we have to stay in our trenches the whole day long. I wonder how many thousands of shrapnel bullets must have been fired at us during the last 24 hours. It's a wearing, trying job and gets on one's nerves fearfully. We manage at daybreak to send out a search party to bring in any wounded that may be out in front, and we find some will have been 3 days wounded, with no water, no food, and no shelter. When found, a large number say they are not half as bad as someone else close to them, and will we look at the others first? Magnificent spirit. And people who say England is going to the dogs and the men of England at present day are inferior to those of the past do not know what they are talking about. The rain comes down at about 9 a.m. and falls all day long in sheets. All the trenches are full of water, no draining any good. A cold wind on top of the hill does not improve matters. But again, everyone tries to be as cheery as possible, and so night comes on. The battle stops for a bit, and again we have some rest, but little sleep. It's too cold, really, for that. At dawn, the firing starts again. How long can it go on, I wonder? And how long can one's nerves stand it? Of course, one is safe enough, as far as things go, in trenches, with cover, etc., but it's the noise and the shock that tires one. A whistle and a bang, and the noise that sounds like the shower of hail as the shrapnel comes through the branches of the trees, and all is over for a minute, and then it starts again. Saturday, September 19th. We still sit in our trenches, being heavily shelled by enfilade fire from the enemy's guns. Every now and then a man is knocked out and nothing to shoot at. One does not mind losing men when one is doing something, but to sit still and be knocked over by one without seeing a soul is trying. At last the CO went to see the general, and we were allowed to withdraw to the ridge on the left of the Gloucesters. Thank God. Total casualties. Killed 35, wounded 131. One blessing is that the 68 missing have come back. They were lost and became attached to the Connaughts.
He is not remembered on any of the Brislington memorial plaques, and he is known only from the WDP 20th of September 1916, when the death of his elder brother, Albert, was reported.
Word of the week.
Now, considering our subject matter for this show, the word I give you is blighty. Now, this is a slang term from Great Britain, or often specifically England, though it was used throughout the 1800s in the Indian subcontinent to mean an English or British visitor, as its origins are in the Indian word biliati, which means foreign, and specifically British. During October 1916, Mr. and Mrs. Smith of Ruby Street in Bedminster were notified of the death of their son, Private J.W. Smith.
He was a fine example to the men under him. He was buried close to the spot where he fell. Whilst engaged in digging trenches under fire after the Canadians had made a successful attack for days, I came across your son's body laying facing the enemy with his rifle and bayonet in his hands, shot through the head, and he was found with dead Germans all around him. He was always a most zealous and trustworthy soldier, and his loss is greatly felt by the officers of the company and by his comrades. He fell like a true hero.
On the 15th of April 1917, Alfred and Ellen Edge of 19 Stanley Road in Redland received the message no parent at the time wanted. Their youngest son, Ernest Alfred, aged 20, of the Gloucestershire Regiment, was killed in action on April 5th, 1917. A letter from the captain of his company said,
"He was killed in action during an attack on a village that, in the end, proved successful. The conduct of your son throughout the proceedings was a fine example to the men under him. He was buried close to the spot where he fell."
Ernest was well known in Redland, and before war broke out, he'd been working in the counting house of Marden, Son and Hall. Incidentally, buried in the same plot as Ernest in the Unicorn Cemetery at Ven Huel are four other Gloucesters: Private Newman, Private W. Smith, Private F. H. Eking, and Private H. W. Hyatt. They all perished on the same day.
Word on the street.
Today, we're going to Barossa Place in BS1, the centre of Bristol. This is one of the few roads in Bristol named after a land battle. This battle was fought in 1811 in the Peninsular War and was triggered by the French kidnapping of the King of Spain. Spain sent an appeal to Britain, and Sir Arthur Wellesley, later the Duke of Wellington, was placed in charge of the British forces sent to defeat the French. During World War I, if you didn't enlist and serve your country, you were considered less of a man. Around 16,500 men applied for exemption on the grounds of conscience, and they were particularly marginalised because they were the antithesis of the iconic figure of a soldier. All men not in uniform were susceptible to having their masculinity called into question. In fact, one First World War recruitment poster said, "Are you a man or a mouse? a rotter and a coward. And so, with that social propaganda in mind, here's an interesting story in the Western Daily Press of Tuesday, the 8th February, 1916, entitled Mistaken for Slackers, a Story with a Moral, about an incident that occurred in a cafe in Bristol, which shows the attitudes of the general public to those that didn't sign up to the war effort. Two friends, one a lieutenant in the army and the other a first-class petty officer in a branch of the Royal Navy, which was originally known as Winnie Suicides, and subsequently at Gallipoli was rechristened Nelson's Light Horse, entered the cafe and ordered tea. Both were dressed in their normal civilian clothes, the first time since the war had broken out. Enter a dashing young territorial, newly returned from the hazards of camp life on the east coast of England, with his lady friend. When they spotted the two men in civilian clothing, they began to talk quite loudly about slackers.
I wonder, they have the cheek to walk about.
And I can't imagine they have the nerve to sit in a cafe and drink tea.
This was much too much for the lieutenant, who said,
If you allude to my friend and I, you are under a misapprehension. Here is my card. You will see that I am an officer of His Majesty's Army, and my friend has lately returned from a year's active service at the Dardanelles and Western Egypt. Now, sir, your salute.
The territorial not only saluted, but promptly paid his bill and left amid a chorus of sniggers from the many customers in the cafe. Now here's a short story that appeared in the local newspapers that highlights the paranoia of the era. A Bristol schoolmaster was suspected of being a spy because he was sketching military scenes in Fairfax Street. It turned out he was doing the drawings for a publisher of postcards. And now I'd like to talk to you about Frederick George Pow of the Royal Field Artillery. He is one of the first of Bristol's soldiers to win the Distinguished Conduct Medal. In World War I, he died from wounds received in the performance of his duty somewhere in France. It was in September 1914, during the retreat from Mons, that Sergeant Pow won the DCM for extreme bravery by staying at his gun in an important position after he had been wounded. His comrade was also wounded and he sent him back but stuck to his gun until he dropped from exhaustion. The circumstances under which the brave sergeant received his fatal wounds are told by Private F. Sage, another Bristolian, in a letter he wrote.
Yesterday afternoon about 4 o'clock, I had to come out of the trenches for some stores when I met some artillerymen down the road. And I was a spectator of the finest bravery anyone could wish to see. I know you'll be surprised to know who it was. Well, it was Fred Pow. He had a gun and orders to fire and run the gun back again. Well, he got started off all right, but whilst he was taking the gun down the field, Fred and another chap got wounded by a shrapnel shell, which the Germans sent over. He got it in both legs. He turned round to the chap that got hit in the hand and said, You'd better go back and get your hand dressed. He was ready to drop, but instead of Fred coming back, he told his men to carry on and fired his gun. He had to bring it into safety again. He did it, but when he brought it in out of range, he dropped down exhausted. He's in the hospital now. I've seen some brave chaps out here, but I've not seen anything like that before. All that he thought about it was doing his duty, which he did like a hero. Now you can understand why he got the DCM.
Sergeant Pow was only 21 years of age when he died on the 30th of January 1916, had lived at Dean Lane Moorfields, and had only just married Alice M. Withy on his leave home the previous autumn. And now the final soldier I'd like to tell you about is Corporal Edward Dwyer, fondly nicknamed the Little Corporal, who was killed in action at Guillemont, France, on the 3rd of September 1916, leading a charge with the 1st Battalion of the East Surrey Regiment. And his grave is located at Flatiron Copse Military Cemetery in France. He was awarded the Victoria Cross because on the 20th of April 1915, when his trench was under heavy attack by German grenade throwers for some time, and one after another of Dwyer's comrades fell, he realised he was the last one left and he was all alone. He stayed at his post for several hours and returned the enemy's fire, and when a small body of them were making a dash for his trench, Dwyer jumped on the parapet and hurled bombs at them, killing several, including an officer, and forcing the others to retreat. He was awarded his VC by the King at Buckingham Palace in the summer of 1915, and after the King pinned the medal to Dwyer's tunic, he complimented him on his performance and shook his hand. Dwyer had joined the army when he was only 16 years old and died when he was 20. He was born on the 25th of November 1895 at 4 Cassidy Road in Fulham, southwest London, and before joining the army, he'd been a greengrocer. Dwyer's decision to join the army had so impressed his father that at the age of 50, he too enlisted and fought in Gallipoli. His elder brother was stationed in Salonika, and his younger brother at the time was wounded and lying in hospital. In the last letter, Corporal Edward Dwyer wrote from the front line, it contained the following. If I shall die, well, it is worth it. I shall get a soldier's grave, but I feel I shall get through. Our fellows are splendid. You may be asking yourself right now why I'm including this amazing young man. Well, I found a recording of him singing We're Here Because We're Here, which was recorded on 11th of August 1916, less than a month before he perished. So as much as I can try to add personality to the names I talk about in my shows, this really adds a lot of colour. So here he is, Corporal Edward Dwyer, talking about what used to cheer them up in the trenches.
There was only one thing used to cheer us up on the march, that was singing. We used to sing sippy choruses, invented by some of the chaps. Tipperary was in full swing then, and they'd always gone to something they'd invented themselves. It used to buck us up, and we would march all the better for it. Sometimes we'd sing some of T.H. Eliot's songs, you know, the chocolate-coloured tunes, but we'd always go into something we'd invented. I don't think I've got much of a voice for singing, but I'd try and sing one or two of the choruses we used to sing. We're here because we're here, because we're here, because we're here. We're here because we're here, because we're here, because we're here. We'd be far better off, far better off, far better off in a hole. Here we are, here we are, here we are again. Hello, 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 hello. Hello, 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 hello.
I don't know about you, but I find it genuinely emotional when I hear the voices of those I talk about, and especially knowing that he was 20 and he passed away less than a month later. But as always, I'd be interested to know what you thought.
Back in the day facts.
And so we start with the 27th of April 1992, when Betty Boothroyd becomes the first woman to be elected Speaker of the British House of Commons in its 700-year history. She would hold the position until 2000, and later sat in the House of Lords as, in accordance with tradition, a crossbench peer. On the 28th of April 1887, Europe's first motoring competition is won by the Marquis de Dion on a steam-powered quadricycle built by French toy maker and engineer Georges Bouton. French newspaper Le Velocipede organised the test, and Bouton was the only participant. On the 29th of April, 1967, Aretha Franklin releases her single Respect, which is written by Otis Redding. It is now considered one of the classic songs of all time and is placed at number 5 on the 2004 version of Rolling Stone magazine's list of 500 greatest songs of all time and number 1 on the 2021 version of the list. It was also included in the list of songs of the century by the Recording Industry of America and the National Endowment of the Arts. The 30th of April, 1989, sees the World Wide Web first launched in the public domain by CERN scientist Tim Berners-Lee. On the 1st of May, 1851, we see the first public flushing toilets, or the monkey closets, unveiled by George Jennings as part of the Great Exhibition at Hyde Park in London, costing just one penny to use. These were the first public toilets, and they caused great excitement. During the exhibition, 827,208 visitors paid one penny to use them. For the penny, they got a clean seat, a towel, a comb, and a shoe shine. And so, to spend a penny became a euphemism for going to the toilet. On the 2nd of May, 1497, John Cabot's expedition departs Bristol, searching for new lands across the Atlantic. And lastly, on the 3rd of May, 1926, Britain's Trade Union Congress calls for the country's first ever general strike in solidarity with coal miners, facing a 13% wage cut and longer shifts. Miners in the north of England, Scotland and Wales protested with the slogan, "Not a minute on the day, not a penny off the pay." In London, the general strike escalated when printers of the Daily Mail refused to publish an article critical of unions. Subsequently, the TUC called out essential industry members, leading to approximately 1.75 million workers nationwide halting operations. Despite the intention to paralyse the capital and pressure the government in support of miners, the strike stirred deep social divisions. Many viewed the TUC's actions as coercive, prompting non-unionised workers and students to step in and keep some transportation services operational in London. Well, I'm afraid that's it for another week. But don't worry, you'll find me right here at the same time and same place next week. Before I go, though, let's thank those who brought today's story to life. And this week, we have Molly Jeffries, David James Hale, Steve Yeo and Joe Wilson from St. Stephen's Drama Group in Bristol, as well as Steve Shepherd from our very own Bradley Stoke Radio and Rose Hales. Thank you, one and all. Thank you once again for listening to me, Alice, on the Backtracker History Show. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can find me on Twitter or Facebook by looking up at Backtracker UK with a capital B, a capital T, and a capital UK. I also occasionally post onto TikTok and Instagram. So do come along and find me, because it's amazing to hear from you and get some feedback or even ideas for future shows. As a small independent podcaster, your help and support is always appreciated. And one way you can do that is to rate the show wherever you get your podcasts. Leaving a review also helps, as it gives other people an idea of what the show's about. The show is regularly released on Mondays. So until next time, guys, take care and look after each other.